Nets Nation, long time no see. I have heard the disappointment in your tweets. I have seen tears on the street outside the Barclays Center. The protests are raging across the tri-state area. I am happy to announce that I will be replacing both Marcus Barrahall and Josh Bass as the new host of the Locked On Nets podcast. Okay. All right. I'm kidding. I'm back for 2 minutes. Basically, I've been editing and posting the episodes while Marcus and Josh continue to transition. They have not been given the privilege of accessing the website yet where we post our episodes. So I've been doing that for them, and they sent me an excellent one on Wednesday after that great win over the Lakers. And I was unfortunately out of town on work the last 4 days, and we didn't really have another option. And I didn't really have the free 20-30 minutes it takes to get these bad boys up. So on their behalf, I'm apologizing because I feel bad that we couldn't get this up earlier. It's a few days later, and since then, the Nets' fabulous win streak that was clearly inspired by me leaving the podcast had ended. I hope you can go back to a happier time when I was not in your headphones and the Nets were still on their winning streak. And enjoy this podcast that was recorded right after the Nets win over the Lakers. And for anyone interested in the Pacers game, which I'm assuming some of you are masochists, you are, of course, Nets fans. Josh will have that for you tomorrow if everything goes well. All right, really appreciate it, and hopefully this isn't going to be an issue in the future. Without further ado, I send it off to Josh Bass to intro you into another great episode of Locked On Nets.
Welcome into Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass, joined by Marcus Barrahall, and coming up, we will recap the Nets' thrilling victory over the Los Angeles Lakers. And also talk about Jared Allen's insane block on the King LeBron James and evaluate the Nets' playoff chances in the Eastern Conference. All that next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Marcus, let's get into it. 6th win in a row for the Brooklyn Nets. And guys, obviously, as you're listening to this, the Nets have beaten the Chicago Bulls and have their streak at 7 games. But we'll get you that coverage over the weekend. Really want to zone in on this victory over the Lakers that had a lot of highlights. You know, it had D'Angelo Russell doing the ice in his veins celebration. It had Jared Allen's phenomenal block on LeBron. And it had Jared Dudley really captivating the world with his old man pickup game.
Yeah, it was really interesting because one podcast episode after we called for more celebrations, we saw the ice in the veins from D'Lo. We saw Dudley after he hit a big three that wound up being a two. He put his arms out to the side, almost like wings. We saw some good sellies in this game, Josh.
Yeah, really good. Someone on the Lakers did something also. Lance Stephenson did...
He did the air guitar thing, which I mentioned on the last podcast.
Yeah, he did the air guitar. Wait, so whose thing is the air guitar normally? I'm blanking.
I don't know. I know it because he did it. I don't know if I'd seen it before, but he did it to Miles Bridges against the Hornets, and he got a tech. He did not get a tech in this game for doing it. But.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I like that one. But yeah, Nets had a great win here. And it was really a team effort. You know, D'Angelo Russell got off to that really hot start scoring the ball. He was on fire. His passing was a huge part of this game. Finished with 13 assists and had that big three to close it out. But Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Jared Dudley, of course, all with huge contributions in this game. Marcus, which one of the role players really stood out to you the most?
For me, it had to be Dudley. I mean, he was pretty quiet through the first three quarters. I think he only had 3 points in the first three quarters, but then 10 in the fourth, and I don't know, just something about his presence and his confidence. Like, after he hit the big jumper that where he had his foot on the line, they kind of, like, had the hero shot of him going back to the bench, and he just seemed very nondescript in his face. Like, he just kind of was like, yeah, I've been here before. Like, I've battled LeBron. I'm Jared Dudley. I got this. And it was really good to see. Yeah.
I love that he did the dribble handoff play 3 times in a row. And it's also like he had a quote after the game saying, "I was setting them up the whole time." And I just imagine Jared Dudley is this diabolical super villain saying, "Oh, I have them." It's like the start of the third quarter, and he does the dribble handoff to a guard. He's like, just a couple more, then I'm going to get them. So good for him to see that really culminate in some success. And he's had a tough year for the Nets. He hasn't shot the three the way we expected him to. He's been maligned by the fans, especially in the starting lineup. Got replaced by Rhonda Hollis-Jefferson, now Rhodey Kurucs. Has a place in the starting lineup. Dudley, some people thought, hey, if he's not starting, maybe he's going to be out of the rotation entirely. And he's emerged as a huge part of this Nets team and really someone who, you know, he's not the most athletic guy. He's lost a lot of the speed he once had, but he's still a super smart defender and can make impact plays on offense just by knowing angles and still being able to hit an open shot every once in a while.
Yeah, the jumper was the biggest shot of the game for him, but he had a lot of nice cuts to the basket where either he kind of baited the defense into just giving him an open layup, or he was able to pass his way out of it to an open shooter. And I think he's just so smart on the court, and it's really evidenced almost more so when he doesn't have the ball than when he does. And you can just kind of watch him cut around screens or pop out at the right times or set off-ball picks. He's just a really intelligent, intuitive player, and I think it shows more when he's used less, if that makes sense.
Right, yeah, he doesn't want to get overexposed almost.
Yeah.
And Jared Dudley also with one of the quotes of the night. I mean, he got into it with Skip Bayless a bit on Twitter. But also, Jared Dudley, this is on Joe Harris, per friend of the program, Brian Lewis. Jared Dudley on Joe Harris, you look at him, white guy, 6'4", 6'5", doesn't look like a ball player. Next thing you know, he's got 18 points and he's going at you. The sky's the limit. People don't really take him serious. After he has 16, hits three or four threes, then they do. So what do you think about Joe Harris? Do you agree with our boy JD?
I definitely agree. I think that the beard maybe makes Joe Harris look a little more intimidating than he used to look. But at the same time, I get Dudley's point. I mean, Joe Harris is 6'6". I just looked it up. A little taller than Jared gave him credit for. But there's definitely a stereotype about a guy who looks like Joe Harris, where he's just kind of a shooter. He's not going to run around. He's not going to drive into contact. But that's kind of the opposite of what Harris has done. I mean, we've talked about it where he's with guys like LeBron in terms of his finishing around the rim. We've seen him be a very handsy, very physical defender. I think he's definitely outperformed the stereotypes, and he's kind of earning his reputation now in the league.
Absolutely. And he does this thing where, you know, he's dribbling and the defender's kind of with him. And then basically he's right by the hoop and he'll just kind of give a little forearm shiver to the defender and gets blown backwards, and then he'll just hit a little 2-foot shot. So, you know, he gets away with some of the contact he has. And, you know, he's not a J.J. Redick type, as you mentioned, because he is physical going to the basket. He plays tough and he can get to the rim as well as shoot threes. You know, he's shooting a really high percentage. The one thing I'll say is that I would like to see him take a bit more volume in threes because, you know, he's not going to be able to contort his body like some of these guys like a J.J. Redick or Lou Williams. And if you're not being able to do that, and teams are really honing in on you, you're only going to be able to take four or five threes a game. So it's great that he has that off the dribble game to supplement it, because if not, he'd be a more limited player.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, he was 3 of 4 on threes in this game. And when I see that, that's great. But it, to me, says that he should be shooting more than four threes, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. But how do we think the Nets can get him more looks?
I think it's probably, well, I don't know if he might even get less looks once Crabbe comes back, but it's a lot of the way that the Sixers do for Redick, where it's off-ball picked, it's kind of running him around on curls near the wings or near the elbows, and then having him pop out, or even just like some weak side action where there's maybe a pick and roll on the left, and if he's in the corner, kind of popping out to the wing and flaring on the roll. There's just a lot of creative ways, and the Nets should really try to use Allen with the ball handler as the screener, just because his gravity will suck in defenders from the outside more than Rhonda Hollis-Jefferson or someone else would. So I think that the trio of Allen, either Russell or Dinwiddie, and Harris is probably the best offensive trio the Nets can have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also having over time more guys that can get to the rim and suck in defenders will be crucial to get guys like Joe Harris now and Crabbe those open looks. So great analysis there, Marcus. Really, really impressed with what you're doing. We're going to take a quick break here. And coming up, we'll talk about a little bit about the Lakers side of things and also relive Jared Allen's great block on LeBron. Marcus, let's get into it. 6 wins in a row for the Brooklyn Nets. And guys, obviously, as you're listening to this, the Nets have beaten the Chicago Bulls and have their streak at 7 games. But we'll get you that coverage over the weekend. Really want to zone in on this victory over the Lakers that had a lot of highlights. You know, it had D'Angelo Russell doing the ice in his veins celebration. It had Jared Allen's phenomenal block on LeBron. And it had Jared Dudley really captivating the world with his old man pickup game.
Yeah, it was really interesting because one podcast episode after we called for more celebrations, we saw the ice in the veins from D'Lo. We saw Dudley after he hit a big three that wound up being a two. He put his arms out to the side, almost like wings. We saw some good sellies in this game, Josh.
Yeah, really good. Someone on the Lakers did something also. Lance Stephenson did...
He did the air guitar thing, which I mentioned on the last podcast.
Yeah, he did the air guitar. So whose thing is the air guitar normally? I'm blanking.
I don't know. I know it because he did it. I don't know if I'd seen it before, but he did it to Miles Bridges against the Hornets, and he got a tech. He did not get a tech in this game for doing it. But.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I like that one. But yeah, Nets had a great win here. And it was really a team effort. You know, D'Angelo Russell got off to that really hot start scoring the ball. He was on fire. His passing was a huge part of this game. Finished with 13 assists and had that big three to close it out. But Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Jared Dudley, of course, all with huge contributions in this game. Marcus, which one of the role players really stood out to you the most?
For me, it had to be Dudley. I mean, he was pretty quiet through the first three quarters. I think he only had 3 points in the first three quarters, but then 10 in the fourth, and I don't know, just something about his presence and his confidence. Like, after he hit the big jumper that where he had his foot on the line, they kind of, like, had the hero shot of him going back to the bench, and he just seemed very nondescript in his face. Like, he just kind of was like, yeah, I've been here before. Like, I've battled LeBron. I'm Jared Dudley. I got this. And it was really good to see. Yeah.
I love that he did the dribble handoff play 3 times in a row. And it's also like he had a quote after the game saying, I was setting them up the whole time. And I just imagine Jared Dudley is this diabolical supervillain saying, oh, I have them. It's like the start of the third quarter, and he does the dribble handoff to a guard. He's like, just a couple more, then I'm going to get them. So good for him to see that really culminate in some success. And he's had a tough year for the Nets. He hasn't shot the three the way we expected him to. He's been maligned by the fans, especially in the starting lineup. Got replaced by Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, now Rhodey Kurucs has a place in the starting lineup. Dudley, some people thought, hey, if he's not starting, maybe he's going to be out of the rotation entirely. And he's emerged as a huge part of this Nets team and really someone who, you know, he's not the most athletic guy. He's lost a lot of the speed he once had, but he's still a super smart defender and can make impact plays on offense just by knowing angles and still being able to hit an open shot every once in a while.
Yeah, the jumper was the biggest shot of the game for him, but he had a lot of nice cuts to the basket where either he kind of baited the defense into just giving him an open layup, or he was able to pass his way out of it to an open shooter. And I think he's just so smart on the court, and it's really evidenced almost more so when he doesn't have the ball than when he does. And you can just kind of watch him cut around screens or pop out at the right times or set off-ball picks. He's just a really intelligent, intuitive player, and I think it shows more when he's used less, if that makes sense.
Right, yeah. He doesn't want to get overexposed almost.
Yeah.
And Jared Dudley also with one of the quotes of the night. I mean, he got into it with Skip Bayless a bit on Twitter, but also Jared Dudley, this is on Joe Harris per friend of the program, Brian Lewis. Jared Dudley on Joe Harris, you look at him, white guy, 6'4", 6'5", doesn't look like a ball player. Next thing you know, he's got 18 points and he's going at you. The sky's the limit. People don't really take him serious. After he has 16, hits 3 or 4 threes, then they do. So what do you think about Joe Harris? Do you agree with our boy JD?
I definitely agree. I think that the beard maybe makes Joe Harris look a little more intimidating than he used to look. But at the same time, I get Dudley's point. I mean, Joe Harris is 6'6". I just looked it up. A little taller than Jared gave him credit for. But there's definitely a stereotype about a guy who looks like Joe Harris, where he's just kind of a shooter. He's not going to run around. He's not going to drive into contact. But that's kind of the opposite of what Harris has done. I mean, we've talked about it where he's with guys like LeBron in terms of his finishing around the rim. We've seen him be a very handsy, very physical defender. I think he's definitely outperformed the stereotypes, and he's kind of earning his reputation now in the league.
Absolutely. And he does this thing where, you know, he's dribbling and the defender's kind of with him. And then basically he's right by the hoop and he'll just kind of give a little forearm shiver to the defender and gets blown backwards. And then he'll just hit a little 2-foot shot. So, you know, he gets away with some of the contact he has. And, you know, he's not a J.J. Redick type, as you mentioned, because he is physical going to the basket. He plays tough and he can get to the rim as well as shoot threes. You know, he's shooting a really high percentage. The one thing I'll say is that I would like to see him take a bit more volume in threes because, you know, he's not going to be able to contort his body like some of these guys like a J.J. Redick or Lou Williams. And if you're not being able to do that and teams are really honing in on you, you're only going to be able to take 4 or 5 threes a game. So it's great that he has that off the dribble game to supplement it because if not, he'd be a more limited player.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, he was 3 of 4 on threes in this game. And when I see that, that's great. But it, to me, says that he should be shooting more than 4 threes, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. But how do we think the Nets can get him more looks?
I think it's probably... Well, I don't know if he might even get less looks once Crabbe comes back. But it's a lot of the way that the Sixers do for Redick, where it's off-ball picked. It's kind of running him around on curls near the wings or near the elbows. And then having him pop out, or even just like some weak side action where there's maybe a pick and roll on the left, and if he's in the corner, kind of popping out to the wing and flaring on the roll. There's just a lot of creative ways, and the Nets should really try to use Allen with the ball handler as the screener, just because his gravity will suck in defenders from the outside more than Rondae Hollis-Jefferson or someone else would. So I think that the trio of Allen, either Russell or Dinwiddie and Harris, is probably the best offensive trio the Nets can have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also having over time more guys that can get to the rim and suck in defenders will be crucial to get guys like Joe Harris now and Crabbe those open looks. So great analysis there, Marcus. Really, really impressed with what you're doing. We're going to take a quick break here. And coming up, we'll talk about a little bit about the Lakers side of things and also relive Jared Allen's great block on LeBron. Final segment here on Locked On Nets, celebrating a terrific victory over the Los Angeles Lakers. Marcus, not sure if you heard, but the Lakers have a guy by the name of LeBron James, who some people call the King, and he had a pretty good game. 36 points for LeBron, 13 rebounds, 8 assists. He looked like he's still the guy who's top of the NBA, cream of the crop. What'd you think of his performance?
Yeah, not bad, you know, 36 points. It's okay, I guess.
No Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.
No, of course not. The hyperactive hyphen. A great moment, by the way, completely unrelated to LeBron, that I just remembered, when Ian Eagle pointed out that it was a battle of the hyphens between Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope at one point in the post. Just a great moment of the game. But for LeBron, 36, 13, and 8, like you said, obviously he's incredible. He played a great game. I had brief Landry Shamet flashbacks when he hit that kind of fading corner three in the closing seconds. But the
that
biggest,
was an insane shot.
Yeah, it was absurd. Rondae played great defense there. It was just a crazy shot. But the thing that jumped out to me the most about LeBron was the 41 minutes, which was kind of a lot for like a regular season Tuesday night game in Brooklyn. He played a lot. Kuzma played 43 minutes. Lonzo played 39. KCP had 38 off the bench. I mean, they really had a tight rotation in this game.
Yeah, I think if you're the Nets, you take pride in this, that you forced the Los Angeles Lakers and Luke Walton to go to a 6-man rotation. I mean, even Tyson Chandler didn't play that much, but Mo Wagner got a couple minutes. Zubac got a couple minutes. The immortal Svi Mykhailiuk got a few minutes as well. But none of those guys really did anything. And, you know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was supposed to be ousted completely from this Lakers rotation. They were looking at trading him, and now he's playing 38 minutes and being heavily relied upon. You know, LeBron, I think he needs someone. He's always had this kind of player, this microwave offense guy, and they're relying on Lance to do it, but it's not really his role just because he's pretty terrible at scoring. But they can almost use like a Shabazz Napier type, someone that can come in off the bench and get instant offense when LeBron is resting for his 8 to 10 minutes a game.
Yeah, I think once they get Ingram back, they'll try to probably use him in that role and maybe stagger him a little more with LeBron. But that wasn't super effective early on in the season. I know they were still getting used to chemistry and all that. A Napier type would be an interesting addition for them. I think, obviously, he had Kyrie in years past, and then Kevin Love, I guess, kind of could do that. Dwayne Wade, obviously, before that. But, yeah, LeBron definitely needs a secondary scorer so that he can almost rest while still being on the court and just kind of take those offensive possessions off here and there to rest up.
Absolutely, absolutely. But, Marcus, let's not talk about the Lakers anymore. That's not what you, the listeners, have come for. Let's candidly take a look at where the Nets stand in the playoffs. And, again, we're recording this after the Chicago Bulls game, which unfortunately me and Marcus weren't able to watch live, but we will watch over the weekend and get your thoughts there. But Nets at the 9th seed right now, tied with the Miami Heat. Nets have a better winning percentage than the Heat, but also Miami, Goran Dragic is going to be out for the next 2 months due to an injury, and he is their primary creator, and basically without him, and since Deion Waiters hasn't really played in the last year and a half, Josh Richardson's their only offensive creator, and the Heat's offense has really been struggling of late. The Nets only are half a game back of the Orlando Magic. Marcus, can we talk playoffs in Brooklyn?
I think we're sniffing it right now. We're getting pretty close. The Magic, as you said, are currently in the 8th seed. They're 14-16, which puts them at like a 38-win pace. They have a point differential of minus 3.9, so they're clearly not great. They're not like entrenched in that spot. I think that the only real locks right now in the East are Toronto, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Indiana, and Boston in some order. And then Detroit and Charlotte are probably going to at least be in the race until the end. Orlando, I think, is going to probably fall out. So I think it would be between them, the Nets, the Heat, and if the Wizards can turn around, one of those teams probably. Maybe two if either Detroit or Charlotte cools off. But the Nets are definitely in the mix, and I think they will be for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking at those teams that are ahead of them, Orlando, they've had hot starts the last couple years and have fallen off. So definitely, they're no lock. Charlotte, Kemba Walker's taking on such an extraordinary load that there's definitely a potential for him to wear down throughout the season. And Caris LeVert, you know, I'm knocking on wood here, but so far his recovery has gone really well from what it sounds like from guys like Michael Scotto who are in the know. And if he could come back around the All-Star break and give them just like a half of what he was giving them at the start of the season, that could be a huge boon to the rotation as well. And who knows, maybe the Nets say, we don't want to take on any long-term money, but let's just make a small tweak here and there to the rotation and maybe a trade or someone on waivers that can help maybe swing a game or two when it comes to it. Because you know what, Marcus, winning's fun. And the last 7 games for me have been really fun. And I love to see the Nets in the playoffs. And, you know, very well they could get swept by Toronto or Milwaukee, even though I'd always hope that Brook Lopez could do some sort of inside job and sabotage the Bucks against the Nets. But playoff basketball is fun. And I want to be able to be in the Barclays Center with a great atmosphere and every fan having a terrible themed T-shirt on their seat that we get compelled to wear. I want that moment again in Brooklyn. So, I'm looking now, 538 is giving the Nets a 40% chance of making the playoffs. And, you know, take 538 with a grain of salt because they've been wrong on things that are much, much more important than Brooklyn Nets basketball. But they're saying there's a chance.
Yeah, and Brook Lopez will hopefully be trying to follow in the footsteps of Jason Kidd as a former Net who just destroys the Bucks from the inside. But I think the Nets have a real shot at this. I mean, looking at their upcoming schedule, they play Charlotte coming up in a home-and-home, the team that's currently in the 7th seed. So if the Nets can keep that going, they've got Indiana on Friday, Phoenix in between those games, which should be a win, though Phoenix has been playing better lately also. I think the Nets could really hit a groove the next few games that can hopefully carry them into 2019.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they go 3-1 over this next 4-game stretch, that would be huge. Obviously, the big one's going to be against Indiana on Friday because Indiana's a team that plays the Nets really well, and the Nets have struggled with them. You know, even though Oladipo's struggling and Miles Turner hasn't taken the step that people want, you know, Sabonis is one of the most underrated players in the league. He's really turned into such a phenomenal offensive player. Collison's a rock-solid point guard. Thaddeus Young is always capable of throwing up 25 points, and he's had a few huge games this year. So Indiana's a deep team, and they're really talented. And if the Nets can beat a team like that, then you know, who knows what the limit will be this season. It could make a push for not only the 7 or 8 seed, but maybe even the 6 seed.
Yeah, Thaddeus Young, I think, actually was player of the week recently, if not.
Yeah.
I think he was this past week. Yeah, but
Worst player ever to be player of the week, I think.
Well, that's an interesting distinction. I would be interested in looking back at that. Yeah, I think the Nets could definitely push for the sixth seed. I think those top five that I mentioned earlier are probably going to finish as the top five, but I wouldn't say Detroit is like guaranteed to be the sixth seed or anything. I think the Nets could definitely make a run at that sixth seed, and as we've seen, they've played teams like Philly and Toronto tough during the regular season, and I would expect that same grit, that Brooklyn grit, in the playoffs as well.
Yeah, there's a reason that they say hashtag we go hard. So let's prove them right. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of Locked On Nets. We will get you a podcast over the weekend. Marcus will be doing some scouting in Phoenix. I know it's a common theme that either Gavin or myself or Marcus is in Arizona pretty much once a month, I feel like.
We rotate, yeah.
Yeah, we rotate in and out. And maybe we'll do some sort of joint partnership with Locked On Suns. But we'll get you something over the weekend when time permits. And looking forward to chatting again soon, Marcus. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. Please rate and review us in the iTunes store. We really appreciate any feedback that you guys are giving us. And we're very excited to see what the future holds. And Marcus, I know for me at least, these last few games have been super fun, and glad that we're getting able to podcast together. You can follow me at JMBass_. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal, Barahal. And we will speak to you guys again soon.
Definitely. Bye.